भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of Spiritual Knowledge, Text Number 25. Yadatmanarpitam chittam Shantam sadvopabrimhitam Dharmam Gyanam Savairagyam Aishwaryam Chabipadyate Yadatmanarpitam Chittam Shantam Satvopabrihitam Dharmam Gyanam Savairagyam Aishwaryam Chabipadyate Yadatmanarpitam Chittam Shantam Sadvopabrimhitam Dharmam Gyanam Savairagyam Aishwaryam Chabipadyate Please chant. Yadatmanarpitam chittam Shantam satvo pabrimhitam Dharmam gyanam savairagyam Aishwaryam cha vipadyate Matters? Yadatmanarpitam chittam Shantam sarvopabrimhitam Dharmam gyanam savairagyam Aishwaryam cha vipadyate Yadatmanyarpitam chittam Shantam satvo pabrimhitam Dharmam gyanam savairagyam Aishwaryam cha vipadyate Yada? When? Atmani? In the Supreme Lord. Arpitam, fixed. Chittam, consciousness. Shantam, peaceful. Sattva, by the mode of goodness. Upabrimhitam, strengthened. Dharmam, religiosity. Gyanam, knowledge. Saha, he. Vairagyam, detachment, Aishwaryam, opulence, Cha, also, Abhipadyate, achieves. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation? When one's peaceful consciousness, strengthened by the mode of goodness, is fixed on the personality of Godhead, one achieves religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. Purport. A pure devotee becomes peaceful, shanta, by desiring everything for the service of the Lord and nothing for himself. He is strengthened by the transcendental or purified mode of goodness and thus achieves the supreme religious principle of directly serving the Lord. He also achieves jnana, or knowledge of the Lord's form and his own spiritual body, detachment from material piety and sin, and the opulences of the spiritual world. One who is not a pure devotee of the Lord, however, but whose devotion is mixed with a fascination for mystic knowledge, is strengthened by the material mode of goodness. Through his meditation on the Lord, he achieves the lesser result of dharma, or piety in the mode of goodness, jnana, or knowledge of spirit and matter, and vairagya, or detachment from the lower modes of nature. Ultimately, one should be a pure devotee of the Lord, since the best the material world has to offer is most insignificant compared to the kingdom of God. Om Jnanatimrandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Napta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Brishabhanu Stute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimati Srila Vibhava Prabhu Iti Namane Shri Shri Vrindata Vivira Padapat Pankajadaya Ne Prabhupada Nupadaya Namashri Vibhavi Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Iti Namane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Kacharini Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshitayani Hare Krishna. So, in looking at today's verse, I thought I wanted to go back to one of the verses yesterday, which is okay in that the class and that verse is already given, so it won't be any overlap. So, I want to go back to verse 19, and I'll read that. Translation, O sinless Uddhava, because you love me, I previously explained to you the process of devotional service. Now I will again explain the supreme process for achieving loving service unto me. And the first part of the purport. Although Lord Krishna previously described Bhakti Yoga to Sri Uddhava, Uddhava is not yet satisfied because he loves Lord Krishna. Anyone who loves the Lord cannot be fully satiated by discussions of devotional service mixed with descriptions of mere Vedic duties and analytic philosophy. So, anyway, the point that I'm wanting to make here is that Uddhava is describing that Uddhava was not satisfied with all the Lord describes, devotional service, described all this philosophy to him, which is done in the previous chapters. He's still not satisfied. So this brings a question as to why he's not satisfied. So even though there is a hint here that he loves the Lord, but I think there is much more to that. So I want to ask you, what are some of the thoughts that you have on this, that why isn't Uddhava satisfied after getting direct teachings from the Lord? What are some of the thoughts that you have? What are some of the reasons? Yes, Madam Mohan Prabhu?
Sometimes they use it in a commercial. You can't eat just one. Sometimes they use it in a commercial that you can't eat just one potato chip, or you will give you one spoonful of ice cream, and that's it. How can you ever be satisfied? So Krishna's pastimes are so wonderful for the pure devotee. They're ever expanding in his heart, in his mind. So when he hears a little, could you say a little bit more about that? Yeah. Could you say it's a taste that's there.
Okay, so thank you very much. That's one angle. Mataji over here.
Perhaps for us, you know, reiterating this important thing that came way before, now again in stating these very important teachings again for us.
Okay.
To hear this conclusion of everything else again, so that we can hear it. Because I know for me, it takes a while. It's taken a long time for me to hear over and over again. So.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any other suggestions anywhere around? Pran Govinda Prabhu? The microphone is coming.
I was thinking the Rupa Goswami Pad's explanation of definition of bhakti, that is never, never incomplete, it is always complete, yet it's never complete. And Sanatan Goswami Pad gives elaboration on the similar things, that all the Brajavasis serve Krishna to an extent, they want to go to the end of that playful pastime, whatever is happening. And when they come to the end, they open the other side, they see another 10 miles to go. So this is the nature of this bhakti, that it will never be satiated like a sense enjoyment. And there is a satisfaction, unlimited. But within unlimited, there is another unlimited. So forever it keeps on going. It never become like a... more wanting.
Yeah, okay, so there's no limit, no end. So thank you very much. That's a very good point. Any other suggestions? So anyway, one key thing here that I was also thinking of along with these points, and we can see that Krishna applied this here in his presentation, that there's one key ingredient that's missing when Krishna describes these pastimes, these instructions to Uddhava. And this one key element is, and he turns towards it here, is what is missing is the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee. So, therefore, when Uddhava wasn't satisfied, what did Krishna do? He went back to the first canto. He went back to Bhishmadev's teachings. So he described, as Bhishmadev describes that teaching to Maharaj Yudhisthira. So the essence of devotional life is much sweeter when it comes from the dust of the pure devotees or the lips of the pure devotees of the Lord. And this Krishna describes in an earlier chapter here. I wonder if we can get a chapter 14, text 16. Yeah, it's stated here. So 16, I'll just do the translation. It says, with the dust of my devotee's lotus feet, I desire to purify the material worlds, which are situated within me. Thus I always follow the footsteps of my pure devotees, who are free from all personal desire, wrapped in thought of my pastimes, peaceful, without any feelings of enmity, and of equal disposition everywhere. And here's the purport. Thus, as the devotees always follow in the footsteps of Lord Krishna, similarly, Lord Krishna, being a pure devotee of his devotees, follows the footsteps of his devotees. A pure servant of the Lord is always meditating on the pastimes of the Lord and considering how to assist the Lord in his mission. All of the material universes are situated in Sri Krishna's body, as demonstrated to Arjuna, Mother Yashoda, and others. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore there is no question of impurity in the Lord. Still, the Lord desires to purify the universes situated within him by taking the dust of the lotus feet of his pure devotees. Without the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, it is not possible to engage in pure devotional service, without which one cannot directly experience transcendental bliss. Lord Krishna thought, I have established this strict rule that one can enjoy my transcendental bliss only through devotional service obtained from the dust of the lotus feet of my devotees. Since I also desire to experience my own bliss, I will observe the standard procedure and accept the dust of my devotees' feet. Srila Madhvacharya points out that Lord Krishna follows the footsteps of his devotees in order to purify them. As the Lord walks along behind his pure devotees, the wind blows the dust of the Lord's feet in front of his devotees, who then become purified by contact with such transcendental dust. One should not foolishly look for material logic in these transcendental pastimes of the Lord. It is simply a question of love between the Lord and his devotees. So this gives a, you know, quite a clarity on how devotional service is actually strengthened. And so many places we find that when the Lord gives instructions, it's very minor. Like Lord Chaitanya, for example, he left just a handful of verses, the Shikshashtaka verses. Then he gave a little bit of teachings to the Goswamis. And he actually gave some teachings to... what's the king that he instructed that he was questioning devotional service? And he was saying, give me more, go further and further. Ramananda Rai. So with all, the Lord was giving instructions in a form of questioning, but it was Ramananda Rai, the devotee, who was highlighting and getting deeper and deeper into devotional service. Even Lord Ramchandra, if he didn't give much teachings himself, but it's the devotees that describes his pastimes and the essence of devotional service. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna just gives a hint in the fourth chapter, Tadvini Pani Patena Pariprasnena Shivaya, just learn the truth by approaching the bona fide spiritual master. And he discussed different kind of yoga systems, he discussed different aspects of devotional service. But at the end, he says, now give up these varieties of religion and surrender unto me. But basically that's like it. So in a sense, that's the beginning of devotional life towards the end of Bhagavad Gita. So, and throughout the Bhagavatam, you find that when the Lord gives instruction, even in the third canto with Lord Kapiladev, it's the instructions to his mother was there, but that level of sweetness that we experience, like what we experience from Sukadev Goswami, is not there. So when it's being given by his pure devotees, then that the essence of devotional service becomes escalated on limited folds. So that's why this name came about, Sukadev. Sukha means a parrot. That when the parrot pecks on this ripened fruit of Vedic literature, it becomes much sweeter, and it becomes much more transcendental, it becomes much more accessible to us, and we develop much more than when we just look at the basic instructions. I remember when we were little, we had mango trees, and the parrots used to come and peck on the ripe ones. And all of us kids, we would be, you know, fighting to get the ones that was pecked by the parrots, because it's sweeter than the regular, than the others that were not bitten. So, like that, when the devotee gets into the subject of devotional service, he can explain it much, we can say, much better than the Lord can. And it's quite evident in many of these aspects, or many of the examples that we have cited here in Vedic literature. So this is what Krishna applied after Uddhava wasn't satisfied. Then Krishna describes again the way Bhishma Dev, who is a Mahajan, was one of the greatest devotees, as we all know. He just repeats what Bhishma Dev gave, and that becomes very, very satisfying. So this is, I thought, was important to just to give us a background. In which Srila Prabhupada, how many people gave the Bhagavatam before? How many people gave Bhagavad Gita before Srila Prabhupada? There are about like 500 different editions of the Bhagavad Gita before, like that. But it didn't escalate anyone's interest in devotional service until Srila Prabhupada gave it. So because of the words emanating from the lotus mouth of the devotee and the blessings of the dust of the devotee's lotus feet, then this aspect, this devotional service sprouts within our hearts. So this is very, very important here. So anyway, that being said, a little introduction, we can come to today's verse. That I hope we have any time to discuss that. So today's verse talks about peaceful consciousness, which actually is brought about when one desires everything for the Lord. You know, a devotee becomes peaceful when he switches his course or his mental course of activities from desiring objects and motivations for himself and switches that to the Lord. And by and large, we have that experience in Krishna consciousness, that when we switch from wanting to service for ourselves to service to Krishna, then we find that we gradually become more and more peaceful. It's all practical to different degrees with all of us, to a very little extent myself. And so we can see how this verse practically applies. And that's the beauty about Bhagavatam. For every verse, we can actually look at it and see how it's very practical in our own lives. And when we apply it, how we can actually get some benefits. So then it's also describes about some of the byproducts of devotional service. That's basically what this verse is talking about. You know, that when one's peaceful consciousness, strengthened by the modes of goodness, is fixed on the personality of Godhead, one achieves religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. So as we go down more here, we understand that when one engages in devotional service, these different aspects develop. In the beginning, it may appear to be that this is the goal of Krishna consciousness, to develop religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. But as one goes further, we understand that these are just byproducts. Even Srila Gaurav Kishore Das Babaji also mentioned like that. One time there was, you know, there were some devotees were discussing about the drought, and then rains came. So, and he described, he said, these are sometimes when we engage in devotional service, there are different byproducts that comes about. That sometimes when one goes down the street chanting, even though you might not have the motivation, well, okay, I'm going to chant so that we can have rain. I think one time, was it when Madananda was president? We talked about there was a drought here, and this was discussed, that, okay, we devotees can do kirtan, and if Krishna wants, you know, he can provide some rain, even though that's not what we're chanting Hare Krishna for, but some byproducts come about. So, on a different level, these are some of the byproducts of devotional service, that one gets some knowledge of the Lord and His forms, and also understand our own spiritual bodies, then we also get detachment from piety and sin. So this is one thing that kind of struck me when I read it. So, okay, you know, this is pretty much just a byproduct. Like, generally we talked about engaging in devotional service so that we can develop detachment. You know, that's one of the reasons why. So we can develop detachment. But that's not the ultimate reason. The ultimate reason is to be attached to Krishna and His devotional service. But in the process of being attached, we automatically become detached from these other things. Just like the child is playing with sand and dirt. So to change a child from that, you give him pen and paper and crayons and so forth. Then automatically those things are being given up. You know, so all those detachment from those things come about, but it comes about as a byproduct of his better engagement. So similarly, here a similar thing is discussed in this verse. And this byproduct, these different aspects comes about almost natural for a devotee. As one engages in his Krishna consciousness, he learns more about the Lord, he learns about his body, he learns about the nature of his soul, he learns about even getting away from the pride of any opulence or any piety or sinful life. So generally we think about, okay, engaging in God's service, then we become pious. You know, that's like a general thing that is being propagated in the material world, to develop piety. But for a devotee, piety or impiety, or piety and sin, it doesn't really make much of a difference to him. Because either way, if one engages in pious activities or impious activities, it doesn't really get one out of this cycle of samsara. One may develop pious activities and go to the higher planetary systems, and then drops back and comes round and round again. So, but a devotee is aloof from that, he moves away from that. Because whether you're a first class prisoner getting in, you might have like a house all by yourself and getting so much opulences there, have your own television and whatever. And then they're the last class prisoner who are in a dark cell. Either way, you're still in prison. It doesn't make a difference whether you're on this level, that level, or that level. So pious activity and sinful activities are like that. They are like from different levels, but you're in the same circle. So a devotee moves away from that. He goes above that. And whether his repetition is stained in this world or not, it doesn't really bother him, because he understands that his life has more than that to offer. One typical example is with the Goswamis, when Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were in Vrindavan. And this one pandit, he was coming around to challenge everyone. He came to challenge the Goswamis to discuss philosophical matters. And in those days, if one is defeated, then he would have them sign a document, a certificate, that, okay, you know, I have defeated you, now, you know, I'm better than you. So when they came, he came to the Goswamis, they thought, this is a complete waste of time, I'm not going to waste time with that. So, but he wanted to argue, so then he said, okay, you win, you know, we accept defeat. And just to get rid of that, because that really has nothing to do with one's devotional life. So publicly it appears as though, well, these are the, you know, best of devotees and they were defeated. But a devotee's understanding is much more than that. Of course, you know, the other past, part of the pastime, when Jiva Goswami, their nephew, decided he's not going to take that so lightly, that he's going to prove to this pandit that his uncles weren't defeated. So he went and he challenged them and defeated them. And so much so that he was actually rejected by Rupa Goswami. That, you know, why did you go and waste time? Why did you go and challenge? That you better go away from here. You know, you're just wasting your time. So being in the presence of the devotee, he kind of also instructs not to be wasting time with all these different activities. So that's like one example of they weren't concerned, well, our repetition would be tainted. You know, they weren't concerned with that, because ultimately those things only applies to the products of this world and nothing to do with devotional service. So similarly here, there are many of these byproducts that come about in Krishna consciousness. There are many, many opulences, many things that comes about. Even here, sometimes at the temple, one engages, you know, we have the temple functions going on, and so much people are bringing donations. You know, it's not that we're serving the Lord thinking, oh, you know, please let you arrange for donations to come so that we can be opulent or we can serve you. No. The devotee serves with his heart, and then things just come along, just hops in. But we don't see that as the primary, you know, goal. We don't see that as the main objective. So as one engages, then different things come about. Just like the example is giving, that when you have the plant and you're watering the plant of devotional service, your other anarthas come about also. When you're watering the plant, the main plant is sprouting, but weeds come about too. So some of these weeds might be good weeds from a material point of view, or some might be bad weeds. But either way, good or bad, they're all weeds. Just like the gross example is giving, that if one has dry stool and one has wet stool, you know, one may say, actually we used to tell this story in the Caribbean with this one man, he had his basket of cow dung on his head, and he was walking, and there's another man who had another basket, and he was also walking, and then it starts to rain, so the first man, he ran under the shelter, so he was dry. And the other guy, he was out in the rain, so then everything got wet and starts leaking on him. And so the man under the shade was laughing at him. He said, oh, look, you're so stinky, you know, you have stool, you know, cow dung stool running all over you and stinky. And then the other guy is thinking, you know, you also have stool on your head, just that one is dry and one is wet. What's the difference? You know, so that's the thing. What's the difference? So whether one has items or byproducts of this world to different degrees, it really doesn't make a difference to us, because ultimately our life requires something more than that. Krishna consciousness and the blessings of the devotees brings us to a different level. And so finally, in this purport, our commentators describe that for a pure devotee, he engages in devotional service because everything in this material world cannot compare to the opulences of the spiritual world. So that's how they concluded in this purport here. So basically, As devotees, we have to try to, like, introspect our lives daily to see where these different opulences, per se, are coming, and whether or not it's an impediment to our spiritual life, or it's not an impediment. So we have to be careful with that every day, every devotee as an individual thing, that we practice our Krishna consciousness, and we practice all the good qualities, and we have to avoid the bad qualities. So every time we think about our activities, we have to see the parallel lines of one, that what we accept things that are favorable, and the other, we reject things that are not favorable. Not that you might be away from them, but we make sure that our mental structure remains focused, that these negative things doesn't affect us. Nor do we see these negative things, even in Krishna, even it may be like spiritual, like to understand the Lord and His form, to understand our spiritual form, to understand the difference between sinful activities and pious activities, to develop detachment and not attachment. So all these things are strong spiritual points that are discussed in this verse. But our devotional service goes beyond that. So we have to think in that line. So anyway, so these are some of the points that I have on this verse. So if there are any questions, comments, corrections, we can take them from the Govinda Prabhu.
In the beginning, I mentioned that Lord Krishna, seeing Uddhava's situation, he brought the reference of Bhishma Dev. And if I recall, that Srila Prabhupada, from Srila Prabhupada's purport, the question in Bhishma Dev's case, because the commentary of the Mataji and everybody that gave is actually also reflects that,
yeah,
including your, because the question that was presented in front of Bhishma Dev was several questions, but the main question was, why Yudhishthira Maharaj is so depressed regarding that entire war that everybody got killed. Vyasdev counsel, Lord Krishna himself counsel, but seems like nobody can pacify Yudhishthira Maharaj, and then Lord Krishna brought him to Bhishma Dev. So first question he had, that why did we suffer? And then Bhishma Dev is answering that some other suggested, and they all were standing in front of Bhishma Dev, who was lying on his arrow bed. Is it due to the karma? And then Bhishma Dev says, no, not possible, because karma has nothing to do with you five brothers. It is only applicable to the conditioned soul. Is it due to the dharma? No, it's not possible, because you are yourself representative of dharma, Yudhishthira Maharaj. And prarabdha karma and dharma has nothing can touch. Is it due to the time? Time causes pain, pleasures, time causes birth, death, all this suffering. So no, time has no effect. 3rd canto, 25th chapter, Yudhishthira Bhishma Dev quoted the verse of Kapildev. The time has no effect to the associate of the Lord. Then what is the cause of this Pandava suffering? If it is not karma, it is not dharma, it is not the time. Three modes? No, three modes cannot touch. Because the activities that you have performed directly under the supervision of transcendental personality, which is transcendental to the three modes. So they went back and forth. Then Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Bhishma Dev, then who is behind everything? He said, Krishna right here, he's standing. Oh, so why we are discussing? Why not we just ask him straightforward? He's right here, standing in front. Then Bhishma Dev said, do not ever ask. Follow his plan. don't inquire. Why not? He is right here. He said, because he is hiding. He is allowing me to speak. He is reminding what to speak. But he, when he appeared, he told me, Grandfather, we are innocent grandchildren. You know everything. Didn't you see the speech he gave that he put me already in illusion? That by his mercy, even to remember him and everything, but yet he put himself like he is one of us. But he is the cause of everything. So then Yudhishthira Maharaj asked, then how will we ever find him? He says, see, execution is followed by the intention. See how he acted. And if we follow, then we can find out what his plan is. And then he gave few 7 sloka on that. And the conclusion is that Krishna chose to be the chariot driver, to be the messenger. He wants to serve the Pandavas. He wants to show the world that how much relationship with him actually get benefited and what the ultimate nourishment of the living entities' hearts fulfilled by in through that devotional service. In order to establish that, he was acting such a way, the whole plan, that nobody knew until today.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking similarly, the Uddhava's case. The Uddhava actually similar, most intimate devotee. There is nothing different between Bhishma Dev's relationship and Uddhava. In a different rasa, but still they both are internal assistants. But there is some purpose, just like the Mataji said, that's for us to be learned something. So he's exhibiting that. It's true also.
But what I'm saying is that whilst all of that, you know, what you said is true, what we're discussing is the principle behind it, not the detail. The principle is that when it comes, when one gets the blessings of the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee, and when one gets the words emanating from the lotus lips of the devotee, then it becomes so much sweeter and much more understanding. Like, as you said, Krishna could have given the same instruction what Bhishma gave. But when it comes from Bhishma Dev, then it has more effect for devotees. You know, even with Srila Prabhupada, many times Srila Prabhupada would ask his disciples to read his purports. And one occasion he commented, he said, oh, I'm surprised that all these things are there. And he just wrote the purport like a few days before. So it's, you know, we understood that Krishna is transmitting through the pure devotee. But when it comes through from him, because the devotee is the living Bhagavata, then the effect is much, much more powerful. And that's the process of devotional service. Everywhere we go, any aspect of our philosophy, we understand, is the service of devotees. Even Krishna told Arjuna that in the Adi Puran. Yome bhakta jana parta. Yome bhakta jana parta mad bhaktanam chatai janas. No, yome bhakta jana parta teme bhakta atamamata. Mad bhaktanam chaye bhaktas. No, teme bhakta atamamata. Anyway, what it says that one who claims to be my devotee is actually not my devotee, but one who claims to be the devotee of my pure devotees or my servants are factually my devotees. So that's the process of devotional service. So the whole lineage of Krishna consciousness is set up in such a way that we get the ultimate benefit from being at the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna's devotees. Through the Bhagavatam, that's there. So in essence, that's the point. Anything else? Mataji over here.
So I've been hearing a lot in a lot of the classes I've been coming to in this section of the Bhagavatam about the modes of nature, and now especially highlighted is the mode of goodness and the benefits that come by being in the mode of goodness. And I was discussing with someone yesterday, third chapter of the Gita, verse 42, where Lord Krishna is explaining how the senses are superior to dull matter, and higher than mind is higher than the senses, intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. And in this wonderful purport, he describes the step-by-step process, like we're bhaktas, like we're practitioners, of how to enter into the importance of being in the mode of goodness for being able to enter a higher plane. And this is so beautiful. Well, Prabhupada says, about lust and how controlling the lower senses with higher intelligence. We have a plan, we have a goal, we control the senses by becoming attentive and committed to our goal of becoming Krishna conscious and serving, and we can thus subdue those lower modes by the higher intelligence. And then also, Prabhupada says, in the Katha Upanishad, there is a similar passage in which it is said that the objects of sense gratification superior to the senses, and the mind is superior to the sense object. If, therefore, the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that the senses will be engaged in other ways. The mental attitude has already been explained. And Prabhupada said that if we engage our mind always in Krishna consciousness, that solves the whole problem. That solves the problem. So, but the thing is, we can't really always think of Krishna engaged in service if we're always agitated. If our minds and our bodies are disturbed and unhealthy, it's very difficult to do that. So it seems like I've always felt like, as devotees, we think we're beyond the modes. We're just Krishna, we're devotees, we're practicing, but we have to also be attentive to take good care of these things so that we can engage the mind in Krishna's service, peacefully, like you were saying before.
Yeah, so, all the do's and the don'ts. You have to look at the do's, and you also have to be conscious of the don'ts.
Yes, healthful eating, balanced diet, working out our difficulties with other devotees and people so that we're not always agitated by arguments and fighting and conflict. You know what I mean? That we can be peaceful enough to be able to focus. So that all these things are important and part of the path.
Yes, so, those instructions, what you just read there, those are things for, our endeavor. But there are two sides. There are always two sides of that. And Krishna gave that lesson when he was little in the Damodar Leela, when his mother was trying to bind him. Every time she tried to bind him with a rope, it is always two fingers short, more ropes, more ropes, more ropes. So then it's described there by our acharyas that then finally Krishna agreed to be bound. So one side was the devotee's effort, Mother Yashoda's effort. The other side was at Krishna's blessing. So that one side that we have to follow these regulations, we have to make the endeavor, that's the key, that's the basic. From our part, we have to do this. But on the other side, if we think like the philosophy of the monkey, well, I'm going to do this on my own, I'm going to jump on the back of my mother and I'm going to, on my own strength, it's not going to happen. We have to be always dependent on Krishna's mercy. And when that mercy comes, then all these efforts becomes fruitful in that we develop Krishna consciousness. So those two things got to be there. Mother Mahamaya?
Hare Krishna. I just find it a little hard to understand that story of Rupa Goswami. Was it Rupa Goswami or Sanatana?
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah. So I sort of understand that they would feel like, I don't care about this guy, I'm just going to tell him, you defeated me, it doesn't matter to me, I have more important things to do. But when I think of it like in terms of today, like, what if that was Srila Prabhupada? Mm-hmm. Would he just say, okay, you defeated me, I don't care, Or would he, I mean, he did care about establishing Christian consciousness in his movement as, you know, bona fide and reputable, and, you know, we have the duty to continue that for Srila Prabhupada and raise, I mean, certainly we have a lot of work to do to raise people's opinions of us. How do we understand?
Yeah, well, you know, it's all time, place, and circumstance. Because if you look at the time when that pastimes took place, the Goswamis, they are already giving so much of their teachings, and they are pretty much just like engaging in bhajans daily. And then this person would come to disturb them from their bhajan, so they didn't want to be disturbed. Just like Gaurakishore Das Babaji, when all these people would be coming, then he just went into this latrine, and he was doing his bhajan there. And I don't know if you ever grew up in latrines, but I did. I can tell you, it's not, you don't really want to be there. Yeah, you really don't want to be there. And then he was drinking from this human skull. So he did those things to avoid others from just disturbing. So their situation was different. In our situation, we are in an institution. And we are out in the Western world where people doesn't know of Vedic culture. People doesn't know of any culture, pretty much, as far as religious cultures. So it was a constant preaching effort. So then, you know, there are different levels of devotees. And like Srila Prabhupada, with all, he was Uttamadhikari. You know, he stepped down to the second level of Majjhima so that he can preach. You know, Srila Prabhupada could have stayed in Vrindavan, do his bhajans, and don't care, you know, with whatever people say. But, you know, the situation is different. So whenever we were quoting, I'm very glad that you brought that point up. It's very, very important that sometimes many people quote Srila Prabhupada. Well, Srila Prabhupada said this in these circumstances. But it was not an ultimate statement. It was a circumstantial statement. So we have to understand the difference between ultimate instructions and circumstantial instructions or statements. So like that. So thanks very much for bringing that up. You had a question, Matthew? Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah, thank you very much. So yeah, these things are there. Like one time, this happened about maybe a year ago, I came across some arguments on the internet. Some devotee apparently left the movement, and he was quoting Srila Prabhupada as very negative, and he actually quoted Bhagavatam. He quoted like 51 quotes of negative things that what Srila Prabhupada presented in the Bhagavatam that was really destructive instead of constructive. And he brought and he quoted the page, a verse, this, that, and it was there. So I thought, let me look up every 51 of them. And every one of them, it was the same principle, that they pull it out of context of what Srila Prabhupada is saying. They didn't bring the entire circumstance, you know. They didn't bring the entire circumstance into picture. You know, just like we have that story with the horse and the vet. The vet had one young apprentice with him, so he was called that, oh, some, you know, somebody's horse had a problem. There was a big lump in its throat. So the vet went there, he looked at it, and he told his apprentice, bring me a hammer. And he was, you know, he bang on the neck, and then the swelling went down and the horse was cured. So the apprentice thought, oh, you know, I can actually go on my own now, you know, I can learn this, it's easy. So whenever somebody called him, he would just take a hammer and start beating on it, and the people's animals were dying. So when he went back to his master, he said, no, that was a circumstance. That horse had actually swallowed a watermelon. So the only way to get rid of it, he pounded on it, it crushed the watermelon, then it was able to swallow it and cured. So you can't, you know, if you just pull it out of context, well, this is what Srila Prabhupada said, this is what you do, it doesn't apply. You know, it doesn't apply to everything. So, like, there was that vivid story also with Srila Prabhupada and the two young sannyasis, Gargamuni Swami is one of them, somebody else was the other in Vrindavan. He just gave them sannyas, and then Srila Prabhupada turned to them And he said, now you have taken sannyas, you should not be one place, you should travel and preach. And then he turned to the other, he said, turn to Gargamuni Swami, he said, now that you have taken sannyas, you should stay here and manage, don't go anywhere. Sounds like completely contradictory, but it was all individual, it was all circumstantial, you know, like that. So anyway, I think there's nothing else. We can stop here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.